And no barracking, meaning wait at least 15 seconds after giving a POI to give another one. Lastly, no swearing. It is now in the Constitution that if a speaker swears, they will be fined a bottle of port that will be presented at the next ordinary meeting. If Fintan were here, you would know all about it, but he decided to leave us for rugby instead. And with that, I would like to welcome Grant Warren, HLM, to open the proposition.
Thank you, Madam President. It's great to be back. It's been almost a year since I last spoke here, given I was in that god-awful place, France. Anyway, I want to begin tonight's debate by outlining what is meant by tonight's motion that this House regrets the left's embrace of identity politics. We in the proposition say identity politics as being of a contemporary nature. It's a term coined in the 1970s in a mission statement by a black socialist feminist group, the Combahee River Collective. And the term referred to a critique of a generalised female experience propagated by liberal feminists of the time. The argument held that greater differentiation and focus needed to be given to the specific experiences of black women in the discourses and messaging of political activism. The term identity politics has, of course, taken on a deeper, more charged meaning over time, with it now being associated with the terms woke or wokeism. That's the only time I'm using those during this entire debate. The problem with this distilled and simplified version of identity politics is that it fails to discuss identity politics in any real analytical sense. It reduces a very real political issue to a slogan which is often used by the right wing to abuse those on the left whom they disagree with. Our approach will define identity politics as the discussion of political action related to issues related in identity, particularly often marginalised or less recognised in political discourse, such as women, the LGBTQ plus community, immigrants and religious minorities. We in the proposition will be arguing that identity politics is a particular issue on the left for three broad reasons. Firstly, that identity politics has corrupted the focus of traditional left-wing activism, which is the advancement of and ultimately the emancipation of the working class.
Point of information.
Go ahead.
Can you define working class and tell me how it is in identity in and of itself?
So, in a sense, I take your point as you're basically saying the working class identity is a socially constructed identity. I'm not getting into particular things. My argument would be that being working class is an inherent value. An identity such as class, nationality, have endured over time for various reasons. We can look into the sociological aspects of it, but I believe it's an identity that's endured because it imbues people with a certain degree of value, and I'll explain why class is an inseparable point, or the politics of class is inseparable from just fragmented identity. Secondly, we will focus that identity politics and its widespread institutional nature has had a negative impact on freedoms more generally, and thirdly, that identity politics break down bonds between social groups and make the formation of alliances more difficult, therefore making the ultimate emancipation of marginalised groups less practical and more difficult in and of itself. Of these main arguments, I'll focus on the impact of identity politics on our freedoms. It must be said that we live in a world we have arguably never had more freedoms. We can marry whom we choose, change our gender identity to better correspond to our self-conception of gender and sex.
On that point?
No, thanks. We can travel to a greater number of countries than ever before, and information has never been more accessible. This might seem like a bit of a contradiction in terms, but we're seeing an erosion of rights that many of us take for granted, mainly freedom of speech and freedom of conscience. Identity politics is toxic to the kind of pluralistic society and diversity of opinion which allow liberal democracies to thrive. As the main feature of identity politics is political action imbued by subjective feeling, this effectively politicises everything as a never-ending series of social constructions.
On that point?
No, thank you. Which are owed some degree of compensation from the state and from those who hold political power. And since political ideas and subjective feeling are inseparable under the model of conducting politics supported by practitioners of identity politics, this gives rise to the dreaded effect of cancel culture. Some in the opposition, potentially some people in this room, may just laugh off cancel culture as proper accountability being carried out against people who deserve it. They couldn't be more wrong. Cancel culture seeks to censor the views of people which someone somewhere has decided to be uncomfortable, offensive, or just outright inconvenient. This has seen people tarred with labels and takedowns performed on their entire characters because they hold an opinion with someone subjectively defined as offensive. These labels can be applied as racist, transphobic, homophobic, etc. This isn't to argue that some people aren't rightly held accountable for abuses of their position or for holding views which are indeed harmful, but it means that advocates of cancel culture can use a get-out-of-jail-free card and kind of make their way out of it of ever engaging with opposing views, regardless of how constructive they are. And these character attacks often work, with the police, for example, often calling at people's doors for harmful and unacceptable for something they tweet that has offended someone down the line. We can condemn, no thank you, we can condemn views as harmful and unacceptable and hold them up as an example of something that society collectively abhors and condemns without seeking to use every institution or tool at our disposal to destroy people for holding a different view. Moreover, it is this institutional reaction to progressivist identity politics which has given rise to free speech being clamped down upon. Certain views are not deemed as acceptable in our media, for example. A wrong step will see someone lose opportunities of work or their livelihood. And some And some people do live in fear of saying the wrong thing, lest they too end up in cancel culture jail. I will give two examples to elucidate this point. Take Paul Embry, who was the a member of the Fire Brigade's union national executive prior to the 2016 Brexit referendum. He was removed from his position for attending a pro-Brexit rally with Nigel Farage. Noah Carroll, for example, in our universities. Noah Carroll was a fellow of St. Edmund's College, Cambridge, who was removed from his position for calling the sociological consensus on race studies, quote, ethically suspect and methodologically flawed. His research was also in a letter signed by 500 other sociologists. His research was condemned for relying on evidence from individuals with, quote, extremist views. However, a follow-up investigation found that there was no irregularity in the initial appointments process and that Mr. Carl's, there was nothing undue in his initial appointment, hence why it raises the question of why he was removed. In this case, in terms of academic freedom, we must question, you know, academic freedom is upheld by the principle of consensus, academics disagreeing with each other and posing counter-arguments. I think it's perfectly fine to strongly disagree with an academic paper or something that someone said or written. However, demanding that they lose their job over it is a whole other question. This is absolutely no way to conduct politics, as it turns democracy and society into a race to the bottom, a contest of who said what, and intense policing of speech and views. This is woefully inadequate for the stability of our liberal democracy and actually creates a reactionary effect on the right wing, whereby arguably even more dangerous forms of identity politics emerge, such as aggressive ethno-nationalism. In summary, identity politics are bankrupt politics. It is the consequence of having no ideas of substance and a desire to squeak out of debates which may have real relevance to society and which may actually need to be worked through rather than the, quote, give me it and give me it now attitude of some identity politics advocates. This form of politics can spiral out of control and manifest itself in an ever more divisive democracy where paranoia and distrust rule because we do not have a consensual open basis for our democracy and the rights we enjoy because of it. In conclusion, I urge the House to vote vigorously with the proposition in regretting the left's embrace of identity politics. Thank you.
Welcome Jonathan Massey to give his maiden speech.
Thank you. I'm quite interested in the argument presented by the proposition here because I feel that it too closely and narrowly defines identity politics. After first defining it more broadly, his argument focused very squarely in on cancel culture and what would be called social identity politics. But identity politics is not just a social thing. Identity politics also takes the form of class, of nationality. These are also identities. And let us not get bound up in race, gender, sexuality, religion as the only forms of identity politics, important though they may be. Critics of identity politics will present identity politics as a deeply divisive thing, as something that polarizes people, sets them against each other and prevents discourse. But I would like to present the argument that our democracy would not work without fundamental differences in people's identity.
On that point.
Oh, God.
So you're essentially saying that social identity is just another identity amongst class nationalities, but why for the last three centuries of nationality and class been the two enduring identities which have defined our politics, and why has that been such a successful basis on which to characterise our politics, and why is this the more broken up identity politics? Why is that more suitable?
Later on I'll point out why that's a deeply flawed that I don't approve. To return to the point at hand, polarisation. People see democracy as two sides set against each other, the Tories and the Labour, the Democrats and the Republicans for the Americans. But democracy would not function without these differences of opinion. A majority, or at least a majority of opinion, is needed to effectively govern a country. If we look at countries such as Northern Ireland, which has this quite controversial system instalment, which has led to no government instalment, you can see that a majority is needed for a stable, functioning government. Without identity, how do people align themselves with movements? How do people vote? The erosion of identity is deeply harmful. We've seen it across the world. Where countries have tried to establish one identity, have tried to take identity out of politics, it has been met with terrible consequences.
On that point...
No, thank you. Let us look at the Nazi regime in Germany. Let us look at the USSR. Let us look at Mao's Cultural Revolution. Movements that seek to create one unified national identity and movements that were deeply terrible for humanity, for the countries that they existed in. Dictatorship, fascism, these are not things that we hold ourselves towards. And these are what happens when you try and remove identity from politics. Both the left and the right necessarily are forced to embrace identity in politics. No, thank you. If you look at Labour and the left wing, they often see the working class identity, more liberal identities. They're progressive around gender issues, and they see themselves aligned more progressively around sexuality issues. And you look at the right wing, particularly the Republicans in the United States, they have built a platform of identity, of white nationalist identity. But where would their voter base be without the strength of identity that backs it up? No, thank you. It is essential for the functioning of the political system that identity is deeply ingrained in politics. The left has continually used identity as a tool to address issues of inequality, to focus on the problems that exist in society. Look at the abolition of slavery. That was an issue very much about the identity of the people who were being oppressed. The issues of the Jim Crow laws in America needing to be reformed. Those were issues around identity. The Jim Crow laws weren't levied at people randomly. They were levied specifically at the black community in the USA. You look at women's rights. Women's rights aren't a general issue. They are an issue of identity, the identity of women. So fundamentally, these issues are very closely interlinked with identity and cannot be separated from identity. From the very conception of the concept of the left on the political spectrum, it has been about identity. The left as a concept emerged in 1789 with the French state during a revolution. No, thank you. When the French reorganized their parliament. They divided the parliament into a left and a right. Now, before this, there were three estates in parliament. You had the first estate, the clergy, the second estate, the nobility, and the third estate, the laity, or the commoners. These are all tied up very integrally in the identity of these people, the identity of someone as a member of the nobility, the identity of someone as a commoner. And when the French parliament moved to a system with a left and a right, these respective groups kept their original positions, and the clergy and nobility chose to sit on the left, and the commoners, the laity, chose to sit on the right. Thus, from the beginning, the left and the right have been defined by their identities. And identity continues to lie at the heart of politics. The left embraces identity politics, but not in the way that the proposition would have you understand it. The left embraces the identity because identity is not just a 1990 band from West Yorkshire. Identity is an important aspect of everybody, and it determines people's political views outcomes, goals, and motivations. Thank you.
Apologies if I rushed through this a little. I drank a whole slushie before this began, so we're going to be doing some Eminem impersonations tonight. I'd first like to say that while the opposition has tried to argue that we are not seeing identity, we're advocating for some sort of system that refuses to help people of oppressed minorities, we would not say that at all. It's just that the way the left uses identity politics is not efficient or useful in modern politics. While the opposition may easily try to warp this argument into an erasure debate, I beg to differ. Identity is always integral for the well-being of people, as seen in Maslow's triangle of self-actualization. However, that is no reason why an entire political wing should be justified in using identity as a carrot on a stick for so many of their policies. I believe the left has a severe criticism problem. And this is, in the long run, hurting leftist politics. I will note that much of my speech as the token Irish-American focuses on US politics, as I feel the Punch and Judy drama of American politics makes for more interesting case studies. Of the many identities left targets hoping to advocate for, such as women, sexuality, and gender, minorities, people of color, many of their attempts miss the mark and fail to provide any sort of actual faith in the left's ability to follow through on what they're offering to these minorities. For example, the left claims to be the feminist side. Now, while I will admit the left lays claim to the usage of the word feminism, with many Republicans mocking the word and looking down upon women rights activists, the actual matter of advancing women's interest has at least some nuance between political parties.
On that point?
Yeah?
Surely, though, it's more beneficial for women to have someone coming from the doesn't, as you say, actively mocking them and deriding them.
I'm not saying the right wing's better. I'm more so saying that the way the left is using women's interests as a carrot on a stick, for example, is shouldn't be done. I feel like it's cruel and hollow for the most part. For example, on to my other point about how the right-wing's nuance kind of exists. For example, many right-wing women say guns have made them feel safer and empower them to live their lives without fear of the worst nightmares. Let me make clear, this is not my personal advocacy for guns or a relaxant on gun laws, but rather a pointed example of why saying one party advocates for a certain identity while the other certainly does not is simply too black and white to be taken seriously. Quoting Diane Nguyen from... No, thank you. Quoting Diane Nguyen from BoJack Horseman, I can't believe this country hates women more than it loves guns. Additionally, a huge problem that the left is dealing with is that the ratio of action to lip service, as I previously mentioned. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm a strong believer that politicians, all politicians, not just left-wing, are statistically more likely to have been photographed on Epstein's Island than advocate for the people during an integrity-laden term. But the left's lip service is, as we're saying, mostly centered around pretending to advocate for certain groups, but having many of the politicians have no real interest in following up. For example, the refusal of any of the Democratic majorities to codify Roe v. Wade since the fucking 70s. I'm already going there. Since the 70s, leading to its, you know, recent downfall, which is very prevalent right now. A post I saw on the internet kind of sums up how I feel about saying the left is more for the identities they're talking about. It was thrown with two missiles, both of which, no doubt, are part of the US's outrageous attack in the Middle East. And one was a plain missile, no thank you, with Republican labeled on it, while the other one was, by all accounts, the same missile, but had many pro-identity symbols like pride flags on it, demonstrating the hollow hypocrisy of the left, if American Democrats can, in any circumstance, be called leftists. Yes?
Is this an issue of the left or an issue specifically of the party, the Democrat Party on the left and the political party on the left rather than leftism as a...
Why are you just asking if it's a problem with the left or the party on the left? That's my real question, sorry. But... No, very No, I do think, because if we're going to pretend to have two parties in America, then one of them has to at least follow through on the identities they're, advocating for. Now listen, I don't mean to insinuate that by and large the left is more open to supporting certain identities. For example, in a recent caucus vote, all 50 Democrats voted to support same-sex marriage, while only 12 Republicans did so. However, it is my belief that the left's ongoing obsession with identity, especially in the way... Sorry. No, thank you. Is leading to a continued breakdown of across-the-aisle relations, which is hurting the ability of the government to make effective decisions to move the U.S. forward in any direction. Oh, thank you. In an ideal world, we would have our noble and just cause and the completely corruptive enemy. However, as seen in the Crusades, this sort of thought is not exactly foolproof. I truly believe that everyone in this room could find at least one thing to agree with on with every other person in the room. While he's not here, Luke McGuire and I like to shave our heads. And that is our one thing in common. Amen. Such is the beauty of realpolitik when you stop pretending identity is the only justification one needs for political views and political action. Additionally, I and many leftists I know have all expressed a feeling of condescension we experience when institutionalized left-leaning governing bodies attempt to appeal to identities. No. It's the sort of thing of like every time Pride Month rolls around, you know, Joe Biden goes running around the White House with the rainbow flag, and it's like, didn't you vote against on the 90s, Joe? What are you doing, you silly boy? No, thank you. Until the left manages to follow through on pandering to minorities with voting power, they will never be trusted or respected by said minorities for their use of identity politics. Please vote with the House. Thank you.
Welcome Tom Burns as second option. Madam President, members of the House, the left's embrace of identity politics doesn't simply exist within a vacuum. It's not any kind of independent phenomenon that was birthed from nothing and without any purpose at all. It isn't, despite what some people would say, some bizarre plot to turn humanity against itself and turn all the frickin' frogs gay. It's not a failure, it's not a waste of time, it isn't some sort of method of political brinkmanship. It's a readjustment of politics as it once was. It was a reorientation towards justice, fairness, and equality. This is the real basis of what is known as identity politics, and this is why we three stand in defence of the left embrace of it tonight. Now, in preparation for this debate last night, I watched, as I often do, a video on the Fox News YouTube channel about this very topic of identity politics, and it was, as you would expect, informative, entertaining, and even-handed. And then amongst the really bizarre and reductive graphics, at one point there were two groups facing each other, and one side had a Black Lives Matter poster, and the other had a literal man in a white hood holding a Nazi flag. Some genuinely interesting points were made, but you just had to look really, really hard to find them. The voiceover at one point noted that due to the rise of identity politics, quote, politics isn't just about what you think, but who you are. It's personal. And this made me stop and think, and not in the way that Fox News usually does. In their treaties against identity politics, America's largest news channel and one of the most conservative news channels wishes to depersonalize politics. To go back to the days where the person wasn't important, but simply
point,
what they thought, sure.
They embrace identity. They want to embrace identity. We are not defending it on the right. We regret that the left, as it was good, has embraced this way of viewing the world, and is a shadow of what it used to be. And what Aidan would champion is something good. I'd advise you, as I do nearly all the time, I advise you to actually argue with what we're saying and not what you wish we would say. You're the opposition, not the proposition.
Do you want to take that one or do you want me to? This is squaring up to a point. It's building up. It's rhetoric and stuff. I'll teach you something. I can, I'd like to use that point to springboard on to a point that I had. Was there really a time when the person was completely divorced from the political? Was there a time when simply cold logic was a master of the day with little regard for the person and identity politics didn't matter? I believe the closest that we've come to this in some way was with the election of our glorious leader's husband, President Bill Clinton. I'll hold for applause. His elevation to the presidency brought about a golden age of neoliberalism, globalization, and free markets. This was the time, I believe, when politics was at its most depersonalized, when identity politics probably mattered the least. After all, what was his second most famous catchphrase? Not that one, the other one. It's the economy, stupid. The economy, as distinguished from class, is a vast sort of spiraling web of business buzzwords and acronyms no one understands. Stock markets, downturns, GDP, GNP, which negates the people of the nation and instead views the state as a referent object. People were seen in terms of their economic output and not as humans with lives and identities personal to them that mattered in the political realm. This was the way of the world pretty much until 2008, when everything came crumbling down following the financial crisis, widely seen as discrediting this neoliberal order beyond any kind of retribution. Now, following on from this, there was a focus shift away from economics to identity, where politics turned back to caring about people and who they are, rather than simply what they can produce.
On that point.
Yeah.
You've used the chronology of the neoliberal peak of the 90s as like the most deep, like this passionate, depersonalized idea of politics. Wasn't most international politics and politics in general across the West defined by a struggle of class and arguments on the economy between the left and the right? Is that not kind of, you're kind of like saying that politics has gone back to identity when in fact?
No, I'm not saying it went back to identity. I mean, you pointed out earlier on, the class was sort of the driving motive for politics for a long time, but I think once people realised in 2008 that this system was no longer working in any real sort of way, this is when identity politics became more prevalent post-2008. It's not really a return, it's more of kind of a new birth of something. In the pendulum swing of politics since the 90s, between identity and economy, each has kind of gotten its turn as the political impetus to sure. Identity politics is perhaps not an inevitability, but certainly a strong likelihood at that time. Without it, we'd probably be still stuck in 2007-2008, sort of on the precipice of total economic collapse, with very little to keep us sane, except sort of really good Rihanna songs and really bad Little Britain episodes. Of course, to the left, the economy still matters. It isn't simply just the only thing we run on is identity. Financial security and stability is not ignored by the politics of identity, but there's a new focus from it and an intent to ensure that it is people and communities who get the stability. It's all well and good for the state to have strong growth and whatever else, but unless people can actually feel the benefit of it, there isn't really much of a point.
On that point.
Sure.
The first one, the opposition said that class was inherently part of identity. You're distinguishing between the economy and identity, which class is a big part of the economic structure. Are you not separate?
No, I distinguished economics from class earlier on as two separate things. And economics is sort of this mad bubble thing that kind of is slightly distant from people and is kind of state focused, whereas class is something that's much more, I think, inherently sort of personal to people. It's actually interesting that Ryan brings this up, because even the most dogged detractor of the left in recent times admitted the left's very strong economic credentials. The Winston Churchill of our time, I'm sure we can all agree, somebody who stood up for the right and what was right, and did so with charisma, personability, talent and guile. The greatest Prime Minister we barely even had, Liz Truss, was part of the economic establishment. Now, there was an idea of sort of weaponization. Grant opened up the woke door earlier on, and I'm going to walk through it. The idea of the weaponization, or maybe willful misinterpretation, has been a common theme of the right's opposition to the left's embrace of identity politics. The phrase itself is loaded and is groaning under the weight of sort of presuppositions and assumptions that have been peddled by the media machine of the right and politicians indeed. In many ways, the reframing of identity politics follows on from that of woke. What was once a harmless descriptor has become a vitriolic insult used by those who seek to undermine, discredit, and decry those who just wish to make a difference in people's lives. So when the right spit the words identity politics at the left, like some sort of curse, they see the power that it can hold, the ability that it has to shake the ground upon which they've built a tower of profit and power. Right. It isn't something to be ashamed of, but something that we should be proud of. Now, my friends, there are so many reasons to dislike the left. The chronic inability to like effectively organize in a meaningful way. I've read more Marxist theory than you have, full purity. The really aggressive leafleting outside of Queens. But the embrace of identity politics isn't one of them. It was the response to the failures of a system that ignored identity for so long and is the protector of fundamental rights. Members of the House, I urge you to oppose this motion.
HLM. HLM sounds so good, doesn't it? Identity politics are shit.
I normally do more of a build up than that. Let me just.
Goodness me, identity politics are shit. Sorry, this has been on the way for quite some time. Okay, look, seriously, I've been sitting here and I've been wondering how such incredibly sharp individuals such as those on this side of the hedge could possibly fall for such patently see-through bad ideas. I wonder how you can seriously sit there and argue for it. Then again, you were arguing with, you know, someone out there. You weren't arguing with this guy. You weren't arguing with Jack. You weren't, certainly weren't arguing with me. But we'll get to that. Look, it must be said, through ignorance or otherwise, it's ballsy to get up and try and sell such patently bad ideas to such an educated and bright group of people such as yourselves. Flattery will get you everywhere, huh? Look, I'm not here to argue in favour of dropping identity politics. I don't think that's the thing to do. I don't think that politics can separate from identity. I agree with you. And so do these guys. The thing that we're arguing against is the embrace of this particular set of ideas that are called identity politics. And I want you to think about tonight's thing as essentially our argument in favour of the left. We're not Ryan Hoey. We're not reverse Aidan Moran. We're not trying to sit here and argue that the right are brilliant, as Tom's brilliant speech was, talking about the embrace of identity politics on the right. It's a bad thing, and it's more the tragedy that the left, which has achieved so many good things that we all enjoy now, has been poisoned by this vitriolic, divisive ideology that only serves to breed hatred and eventually violence. I'll get to it. Look, I'm not going to get up here and say I'm a firm believer that when anyone is down, it's best to kick them. Because funny as that would be, I think it's bad when bad things happen. And as much as they're going to sit here and try and convince you that it's a binary choice between thinking that it's bad when bad things happen or agreeing with us, you must reject it. It's a false equivalency. It's fucking nonsense. Okay? We're all decent human beings and agree that people are valuable and must be treated with dignity and fairness. All we're saying is that identity politics is not the means by which that can be achieved or most effectively. Sure.
It was a balance of identity politics from around 2008 with a lot of the biggest...
Start again.
Since 2008, where most of the sort of social change had happened broadly across most of the West, it was the prevalence of identity politics that brought these about into the political mainstream that allowed them to become law. That's what this identity politics has enabled all of these.
No, that's not identity politics. Identity politics is viewing things first through the lens of identity. That is the lens through which you look at the world, not the lens through which things are out. And I will address how that differs and the real benefit of not doing that. Look, I'm gonna name a good player of identity. I say good, a very prominent player of identity politics, a group of people who have embraced identity politics to its most extreme, the KKK. Now I dare any one of you in the room get up and defend their ideas. No takers? Nobody? Oh really? No. Look, you're not going to because they're an abhorrent group and their ideas are so far beyond the pale it'd be comical if it weren't for all their victims. So to fend this off, the world has sat round and gone, all of these people, they're a shower of bigoted cunts and we should ignore them. We should get rid of them insofar as we can. They're not invited into polite society. And again, who'll argue against it? It's right. It's the right thing to do. Anyone within reasonable opinion believes that. And that is an example in identity politics. It is an example of leading to that extreme that is hateful and violent. No, thank you. Think about the adoption of a set of ideas as going down a path, okay? Think about it as going down a path, and there's a thing at the end. When an ideology is put into power, you can begin to see those things move forward. With every campaign and engagement that goes through, you can see year on year that manifests more, and you take a step further down the path. Now, if we can see throughout history, as my colleagues have talked about, there is example upon example of this being embraced for, I'm not taking another POI, of this being embraced by regimes. that then leads to these regimes devolving into divisiveness, devolving into hatred, prejudice, and violence. No, I fucking, you're not listening to me. You don't need to agree with any one of us where along this hypothetical path the modern left wing is. But identity politics is an ideology that has led to a destination that has unilaterally resulted in hatred, in divisiveness, in violence, in genocide on both the left and the right. So I ask you, why on earth should any good nature, good faith, political movement go down that path when you know what's at the end of it? Now, my two colleagues have talked about alternatives to pursuing the identity politics path, okay? And any number of those alternatives are, well, you've got a kind of left-wing one, you've got a kind of right-wing one. Listen, you can disagree with either one of them or both of them if you really like. We don't need to agree on the alternative that's suitable. We need to agree that an alternative is the thing to pursue. That's what we need to agree on. And so long as you agree on that, that this inevitable disaster looming at the end of the pursuit of identity politics is wrong and it is bad for the left and the right, it is not conducive to anything but divisiveness and hatred. And I want to focus on the antidote. My pitch this evening is that their identity-first view of the world pales in comparison to putting any of our universal human virtues first. Dignity, fairness, tolerance, wisdom, and perhaps most relevant here, empathy, ladies and gentlemen, which is not exclusive to identity politics. Division and hatred, they're antithetical to such virtues, but they sure fit in well with identity politics. I think they're shit. Thank you very much for the proposition.
Concerned with Doctor Who, Taylor Swift tickets, and I don't know, whatever goes on in Donegal. Maybe they argued the argument correctly tonight. I thought it was very intriguing. I would have hoped that spending time in France, Grant, would have made you a little bit more revolutionary, a little less conservative, but I see that your DUP ways have stayed true even in the face of today. First of all, you said that these have corrupted traditional focus. I want to ask you, that traditional focus, does that just benefit straight white men? And is that perhaps why you appreciate that? Now, I know some of the room sighed there. Oh no, straight white men. No, look, we all love straight white men. Lord knows I've been there myself, God forbid. But listen. It just does benefit this. And folks, we have to remember what the actual motion is tonight. It's that this House regrets the left's embrace of identity politics. We are not, the opposition do not have to argue that identity politics are fantastic. We do not have to argue that identity politics is the best thing since sliced bread. That's not our argument tonight. Identity politics is a form of politics. There will be flaws, but we are saying that there's no point in regretting it because the benefits outweigh the cons, and the proposition tonight have not argued otherwise. They have failed to address the motion, and Mr. McCormick, I know that you appreciate when people address the motion, but you failed to address it tonight, especially when you say the KKK. Do you know this motion is on about the left, or the KKK, the left wing, folks? I'm a bit Ian Moore, the left-wing. Put your hand down, thank you very much. Further, I don't know whether to tie in these a bit more. I'd like to move on to my own points. I'm trying to decide between the two. I do want to say, though, you called us sharp individuals. I want to ask the proposition, would they identify themselves as sharp shed tonight after their arguments? I don't think anyone else in the room would, no offence. Folks, yeah, tonight we really want to embrace respect. That is what the Literific is based on, but put your hand down, thanks very much. The opposition tonight have argued, Jonathan first argued, that identity entails a broad variety of factions, from social factions to class, and argued that divisiveness, which is being argued is rooted in identity politics, is not. It's rooted necessarily in democracy in and of itself. Identity politics comes out of that. It says that factions are already created in our society, whether you are a woman, whether you are a person of colour, you are already treated differently. Identity politics doesn't go, put your hand down, identity politics doesn't go, let's create these factions. It actually recognises that these factions are there in the first place, and it gives voice to people who are otherwise voices. I find it interesting, Grant, that you also mentioned a point that I'm bringing up tonight, so thanks very much for that. It was a group of lesbian socialists who in the 1970s, I believe, coined the term identity politics. And I want to quote you what they said and what they meant by identity politics and what the left has embraced at the whore? Of identity politics, and they said that we believe that the most profound and perhaps even the most radical politics come out of our own identity. We reject pedestals, queenhood, put your hand down, and walking 10 steps behind to be recognised as human, levelly human, would be enough. Listen to that again, folks. To be recognised as human, levelly human, would be enough. That is what is at the heart of identity politics, to be recognised as equal to others. Because unfortunately, in our society, identity politics didn't create these factions, it's just recognising them. We have a society that treats women like shit. We have a society that treats black people like shit. We have a society that treats asylum people like shit. Okay, and identity politics gives people a voice and a forum. Put your hand down. Even our own SU embraces identity politics. Aidan Moran down there can attest to that fact. Folks, we have embraced, and there's no problem. There's no problem. The only problem arises whenever the right wing, and I'm not saying everyone over here is right wing, Grant definitely is. Up in the air, and I think if I call Jacqueline right wing, she'll pop up against the wall and shoot me. But we have in the SU embraced identity politics. We have created these things called student associations. Plug in the Women's Student Association a little bit. Put your hand down. You don't even have We've embraced these things because we recognise that we need to give voice to minority groups. We recognise that that is the solution in order to mobilise grassroots organisations. That is the key, and that is what's happened tonight. Tonight, instead, the proposition has demonised identity politics, and they haven't answered the feckin' motion. Have you ever heard the phrase, put your hand down, have you ever heard the phrase, my grandma would be a bike if she only had wheels, right? They would be correct if only they would answer the actual motion. Identity politics, they've missed the key part, comes about because people facing discrimination and they look for solidarity amongst those with shared experience. It's not division, it is actually inclusivity in its most pure form. It is intersectionality. And perhaps those who listen to Jordan Peterson and Joe Rogan on a daily basis don't believe in that. But it sucks to be you, you know what I mean? Start reading actual politics. Identity politics is the combatant of identities being oppressed, undermined and silenced. Put your hand down. Historically, identity politics has brought some of the most influential movements. For example, the women's suffrage movement, Jump on the Women, right? Same-sex marriage and abortion rights. And when the right don't demonise this, we actually do accept it. Thank you very much, folks. Please vote with the opposition.
Thank you, Roisin, for that brilliant speech. And that's actually Roisin's first in-house debate, so could we give her a second? And now we move on to questions. Just to explain it, I'll ask a proposition question, an opposition question, and an abstaining question, and one person from each side can respond, okay? Here, I'm guessing you have one for the proposition.
Right, so the reason why I'm bringing this up is that one side has completely negated and basically ignored one of the, this side has completely ignored a massive benefit of identity politics, is the fact that essentially you were saying like, oh, it's so divisive, it's led to these terrible things, but at the same time there's movements that wouldn't have happened without identity politics. One, like for example, like racial equality was, no one cared about it really, before that all happened. And Martin Luther King essentially brought black people together, brought black identity together, and used that as a driving force to get people to unite and get people to care and to get people to actually essentially go for the change that was necessary in getting all those sweeping changes. You've completely ignored the benefits and you've basically cherry-picked extreme examples from the right, by the way, and basically gone, ah yes, it's all terrible. No, you have to compare the benefits versus, you have to compare, like, you have to say why it's worse. You can't just go, oh, this terrible thing happened. No, why is it worse? Why is it better? Compare, please.
Okay, in terms of your argument, okay, the movements moving forward, I would say, fundamentally, if you look at something like the French Revolution, for example, fundamentally look at as, and the values of that, enlightenment values, I'd say, it's liberty. Okay, and what we're really talking about, broadly speaking, what we're really talking about is not identity politics, as in identity being like ingrained in politics in some way, shape, or form. We're saying that identity politics is a very particular set of ideas. It's a lens through which you look at the world, like Marxism, for example, which is a lens through which you look at the world. Identity politics in that way is putting identity paramount. And when you put identity paramount, you start to see divisiveness and hatred and all the things I was talking about. We're not ignoring the idea that identity has a place in politics. It was the first thing he said, she said it, and I said it.
Compare.
We don't need to. What we're saying is that identity politics in the modern conception of identity politics, we're actually arguing against because we get to set the notion book or the motion book. But beyond that is that the idea that identity politics is vulnerable, which what we're arguing, as in somewhere from 1970 onwards, was the basis of one of those perfectly phenomenal moves forward against injustice and oppression, which we condemn unequivocally.
Opposition to respond?
unsurprisingly, here I agree with all of that. I'd say I wouldn't compare identity politics as a lens in the same way as you did to Marxism. Because you said yourself, identity politics can be the left and the right. Marxism doesn't really use that much by the right.
Okay.
Regardless of any of that, that's what I was making earlier on, is that a lot of the social change that came about sort of post-2010 onwards, perhaps. But also things like sort of same-sex marriage, model Western nations, abortion, liberalization, and all the rest, came because of the left putting more of a prevalence on identity politics, identity issues. And as I said sort of before that, the Bill Clinton days, identity was less important. That's the point I was trying to make, is that the importance of the left put then in politics in the modern age, post 1970 or whatever else, is when the most change happened and when an awful lot of good came into the world because of the prevalence that the left did put on these sorts of issues.
Do we have a question for the opposition? Okay. Yeah.
Right, so you brought up a couple of examples of identity politics benefiting certain movements, like you mentioned the American Civil War, you mentioned the suffragettes. The thing is, you could argue that with these things, it wasn't entirely identity-based, like the American Civil War, and a lot of it was economic-based. The American Civil War, most people in the North didn't actually, most of them were still quite racist, but they viewed the end of slavery as like an economic issue, not an issue of morality. And with the suffragettes, they gained a massive amount of momentum in their movement when during the war, most of the men were out fighting and they were working the jobs. They were actually being put in the workforce. So, and another one that wasn't brought up that I thought on my head was the bus strike where bus boycott where black people leveraged their economic ability as a way of actually pushing for social change. So could you not argue that a lot of these movements that benefit identity are actually mainly motivated by economic factors, not by identity factors?
It's a mixture. Definitely, we're not saying that it's solely identity. That wasn't the purpose of tonight, nor was it the motion, nor was it anyone's point. We're saying that identity was a core part, and it's also how people mobilise. not necessarily one factor, but the mobilisation of how a group comes together and forms together. That was the point about the association, that was the point about the history of it, that was the point about it being more inclusive than that. So I think it needs a more well-rounded perspective on it rather than just it's one or the other.
Proposition number seven.
Yeah, go ahead. Right, so I think you raised some very good points about how identity politics, but we emphasise so many times, and it's a very contemporary thing. I think it's Colin's contribution to some of the opposition vehicles, it's a very contemporary conference. But we didn't say at any point these causes, this social change that has been brought about, in which identity is a factor. We are trying to argue where identity is the primary factor of conducting politics. It leads to division, it leads to alienating potential people and allies, for example, and we would reject, for example, the opposition's arguments that the likes of marriage equality came about as just like this kind of tangential factor of the kind of decline of the focus on economics and class issues. I would argue that, for example, if you take the feminist movement by the 1960s, well, there was largely a focus on women of a certain social class, for example, like, to this day, the left have not resolved those issues. They have not got full agreement on the class basis of feminism, for example. It is a focus, but they have not organized and focused enough and coalesced around a single idea of what not intersectional feminism is in order to actually practically achieve change. So, in that case, we would argue that it causes too many divisions within social movements to actually practically attain their goals through policy making and rights, basically.
And do you have an abstaining question? I'll go to Noah.
I mean, the name of the political game is to get votes. People want more identity politics based stuff. So it's not smart for the left to actually embrace those issues to attract voters, seeing as the main goal of political parties to get votes.
Proposition first.
It's not true. This entire point is that their use of identity politics is like not like useful for advancing those issues. The left, in my case anyway, the Democrats, they're not using identity politics to like help the voters that they're targeting. No, they're just using it to get votes.
Opposition to respond?
Sure. If it works, you need to do it worse.
I think that's all we have time for tonight anyway, but we move on to our vote on speaker ability. So if you think that the proposition spoke best tonight, please raise your hand now. And if you think that the opposition spoke best tonight, please raise your hand now. Oh, God. 46. And if you would like to abstain, you think they both did bad, or both did really well, please raise your hand now. Seven. So could you please read me the vote on speaker ability, Mr. Secretary?
Well, there are 16 votes for the proposition, 35 votes for the opposition, and 7 people weren't even listening. By the West Belfast margin, we have the opposition.
Lavery's noise. We have a room booked, so please go there. And can speakers come forward for a photo? And also next week's please go.